888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you'd like to join the conversation, get through a couple digital questions here. Texter wants to know, what can I use organic in my garden? I'm getting destroyed by insects.
Oh.
I guess I forgot that part. Bugs destroying my garden. Is there a good natural product?
Lots of them. Anything containing spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, is great for just about everything but aphids. If you've got aphids, anything with neem oil works really well. So, yeah, there's lots of good options for killing bugs with, you know, if it's caterpillars, BT or Bacillus thuringiensis, dipel, it's also called thuricide, all the same thing, works great. So kind of need to know a little bit what you're targeting to, not a little bit, you really need to know what you're targeting to kill. You know, what kind of insect do you have? Take a leaf, catch a couple of the bugs, take them into the nursery, and they can fix you up with the proper antidote or insecticide for that.
And we really enjoyed using that Captain Jack's dead bug brew when they approached us, and we tested it out for a year ahead of time.
That is spinosad, and that works great on, like I say, everything but aphids. It just doesn't do very or at all on aphids. One of our longtime partners, listeners, Tom Pastorino, was in the nursery the other day, and he just had his spider mites were on all of his garden vegetables. I mean, it was so bad. They were coated in webbing and insects. And so we got him turned on to the Captain Jack's, and hopefully that's doing a good job for him.
I thought you were going to say he was covered in spider mites.
Well, he probably was. He didn't look like he'd had a bath in a day or two. So.
He's already called in once this morning in the 7 o'clock hour when Dad was talking about hiking the Grand Canyon. So appreciate you spending time with us Saturday morning, Tom. It's 1-888-767-4348. Rob sent us a picture in earlier, and he's got a grass lawn under a big ficus tree, and it's he's wanting to know if he's going to be able to bring the Bermuda in with all the shade.
It's going to get tougher and tougher as it's shadier and shadier. Plus, you've got that big tree that's competing for water and nutrients, around it. So, sometimes we have to just decide if we want shade or if we want grass. And, there's not much wrong, really, with not having much of a lawn through the summertime when you're not enjoying it anyway. In fact, I think sometimes we have it bass-ackwards here as to when we should really have our lawns. You know, our ryegrass winter lawns from October to about now is when we're really out there enjoying and using the lawn. If it's a shadier area like that appears to be, it's going to be a struggle to get Bermuda grasses to grow there anyway. So, you know, maybe get it as good as you can and just kind of live with it through the summertime.
Yeah, and kids have a big factor of that. You know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have this summer lawn, but it's hard to slip and slide in October.
Yeah.
A little cold at that point.
That's true. I mean, you know, it does, you know, there again, that's matching your lifestyle to your landscape. That's the true definition of, you know, in a way of xeriscaping is, you know, what are you using the lawn for? Is it strictly ornamental? Well, then, you know, maybe you decide whether it's worth having the lawn or not. If you got kids and dogs and pets and you're out there slip and sliding and, you know, the dogs need a place to play on and you know, use, then, you know, in all likelihood, you need some kind of lawn, you know. So in that case, you know, be cognizant of where you're planting shade trees. You know, if you're planting a shade tree right out in the middle of your lawn and your lawn's only a couple hundred square feet like that one, and that shade tree is going to shade the whole area in deep, intense shade, it's going to get tougher and tougher to grow the Bermuda grasses. You might try St. Augustine. You might try, there's a hybrid Bermuda called Tiff Grand that might be worth looking at. It's a little more shade tolerant. Dichondra, fescues, there's some things you can play with and try with, you know, mixed results.
We appreciate the email. I said Rob, it was actually Justin. I apologize. Hope that helps. Hot dogs and horticulture today?
Yeah, we do. Last one for the season. We starts getting a little warm, but we'll have Mike Patron be there cooking dogs, and come on out and get a free lunch. There is a free lunch today.
That's at Harper's Nursery on Hayden, south of Thomas.
Just south of Thomas at Virginia on Hayden on the east side, correct.
Now, what with this going into June, as you were mentioning, this is typically the hottest month. What summer flowers? I like to keep flowers on Mama's front porch.
You know, we've got a lot of options anymore that we didn't used to have. It used to be just kind of vinca and moss rose, and that was kind of it. But there are pentas and angelonias. This isn't a new one, but I think it's underused as gazania. I think even Katie Ruellia and Lantana, if used as, even though sometimes those are landscape perennials or shrubs, they make a great annual in the garden or in a pot that you just, you know, tear them out when it comes next summer. And of course, we still have vinca. The trailing vincas have gotten very popular, the Mediterranean or the cascading coras that are more of like a spreader. There's also a spreading angelonia. The sweet potato vine has probably become the most popular summer, even though it's not really a flower. It's colorful foliage, the purple and the greens you see mixed together. You know, those do a great job of covering up some beds, filling pots. They love the heat. They're very bright and colorful.
I don't know who the salesman for that plant is, but he sure did a good job last year. 2 or 3 years ago, you didn't see that, man. You couldn't pass a commercial property that didn't have sweet potato vine plants.
They're using more and more and more of it instead of some of the flowers just because it's so darn hardy. And it covers the space well and it fills things up, and it looks good.
It does, especially like you said, when you've got both colors.
Yeah, you almost need to use both colors to really get the full effect, to have that, you know, the one makes the other really stand out and gives you some color. If you just had all green or all purple, I don't think it would be quite so good. They're also great in hanging baskets, by the way.
How big will they get? So you can put those in a pot?
You can. Well, that we've got one in a big whiskey barrel that by the end of the summer, it's out over the edge of the whiskey barrel and growing out across the asphalt 8 or 10 feet. So they can get pretty darn big by the end of the summer. You can, you know, pinch them back, trim them, you know, keep them pruned up, keep them contained pretty easily.
Now, you had mentioned shade versus lawn. You always say, you know, the best time for a shade tree was 15, 25, 30 years ago.
A while ago, yeah.
The second best time is today.
Yeah.
And to take advantage of the full shade, if you're trying to shade a portion of your house or a patio, this is really the time you need to take attention on where that sun is. Because if you did it in the winter, that sun was in a different location than where it's going to be hitting today. And the amount of daylight you have on it's longer. So really take note of where that shade is at, or where that sun is at what time of day, because that can really change where you're putting that tree in the ground.
And you want the shade this time of year, not necessarily so much in the wintertime. In fact, maybe even using a deciduous shade tree that loses its leaves in the winter is not a bad idea. So it lets the summer sun in and lets you help warm the area or the house. But the sun does move north to south, so the sun is just about here in a couple weeks at its most northerly path. Even though it's east and west, and, you know, rises in the east and sets in the west, and as it gets hotter, the western exposure is the hottest, most hot side of the house, it is going to move from north to south in its travel across the sky. So sun doesn't move, the earth tips, but take that into advantage, into account when you plant that tree as to which way you want the shade to cast. Also, remember it's going to, you know, you want it to cast the shade in the afternoon. So, you know, you want the tree to not be right up against the house. Maybe you want it to be out a ways. You know, yeah, take all that into account. And, of course, the size of the tree, make sure we realize that, hey, that tree's going to get 20, 25, 30 feet across. You know, do you want it right in the middle of your yard, or do you want it off over a little bit, or, you know, is the yard big enough for that tree? Maybe you want to shade the wall by using a vine or a big shrub or something instead of a tree as well. So you got to take all those things into account. Right plant in the right place is a huge issue, especially when it then comes to maintaining it down the road.
And a tree needs water on the roots end at the extent of where the canopy is. So your watering is going to be out that far as well, which could really change it. I've got one case where that's kind of nipped me in the behind a little bit. We've got one little walkway path right here that I wanted it covered with a canopy. Well, now, right now, That's right, where the tree line is. So every time we water, we've got this mud track right through our little walkway.
Yeah. Well, you know, some Bell Guard pavers and take care of that walkway from being muddy, right?
There you go. Let's bring Michael into the conversation. And Mesa, good morning and welcome to the program.
Thank you. You know, you guys, I love the idea of planting sweet potatoes, but are you talking about sweet potatoes or yams?
Well, this is ornamental sweet potato. It's neither.
Oh, bummer.
Now, you can plant sweet potatoes, edible bearing ones, and they do really well all summer. It's just not as pretty a foliage. It's just kind of green.
And they'll tolerate the heat?
Oh, absolutely. They'd love the heat.
Well, so do I. Uh-huh. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We picked a good state for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in the right spot.
Now, do you have any magic gardener's tricks to digging up yams, sweet potatoes, potatoes? That's one thing that I have had great success growing. Not so great success digging them out without scarring them up.
Well, generally they use a fork, like, you know, it's called a potato fork, and it's a wider blade. It's not a pitchfork that has round tines. It has a shorter, flatter, wider tine that you push down in, and then, you know, pull it up so that, you know, occasionally you're going to run a tine through a potato. You don't know where they are down there. I don't know how you get all of them up without scarring or cutting some of them. It's just going to happen. But to minimize that, you use a tine, you know, so it's got spaces between the tines when you shove it down and then, you know, bend it over to, you know, pry it up. You know, you pry up some potatoes up out of the ground that way, and the soil falls between the tines, and you end up with potatoes. That's what those are made for.